9/11 happened, I didn't have a title that fit the event, and I'll tell you what that was. But today, the title actually fits the events of the week, Taking Awareness by Surprise. We were all pleasantly surprised. Actually, that service back then was going to be, it was called Snakes for Heaven's Sakes, and it was going to be about snake handlers. And I actually was going to bring snakes to the service, but Carol Sullenberger said, "Don't you dare." So as you heard, our worship theme for October is renewal. It's prefaced by saying we are a people of renewal. This morning's reflection looks at the role of the imagination in creating insight and organizing the wholeness of life and our individual lives anew. One day last week had been unusually or particularly long and tiring. I left the office a little after 6 in a hurry to get to Wolf Lake down the road and to have time to paddle before dark. The clouds hung low and it was raining just a little. Then as I walked out of the trail at the lake's edge, the sun peeked under the clouds. I was surprised as the lake and the trees along the shoreline glowed in golden fall light of late afternoon, that light that happens when the clouds and the sun are just right and everything looks new. Me? What did I do? I sat on the dock, my knees pulled up to my chin, and I soaked it in until evening came. Once more, a little more right with the world. Buddhist nun Pema Chodron has written a book with the great title, When Things Fall Apart. Yeah, some of us sort of go and nod our heads. We're drawn in because we've all had the experience of things falling apart. Anybody here who hasn't? Maybe you shouldn't be the minister, but you could at least be the guru, you know? Don't you then infer from the title, When Things Fall Apart, that things come back together? Or at least there are ways that will work for you or come together for you in the new space of what has fallen apart. There are ways to deal with life in the times in which things have fallen apart. Why else would you buy the book? And one of the ways that things come back together after falling apart is to be seen in a new arrangement, to be seen with a new organizing understanding, or that big word, but it's a good word, paradigm. Think reframing, as in framed or seen differently. An aha moment, the surprise. Oh, so this is how it works. My story of deciding to become a Unitarian Universalist minister is just such a story of things falling apart. My life frame coming apart, then me putting pieces back together over a few years, and my awareness then being taken by surprise. This story begins, as many such stories do, with the end of a relationship. Anybody here not had that happen to them? I started to ask how many people have been divorced, but I decided that was not the way to go. That's what happened to me. I was in my early 30s. My wife at the time left me. I was shocked and hurt. I would say things had fallen apart. A year later, I quit my job as a conservation biologist and program director for the Nature Conservancy, and then I began to work in outdoor adventure and log cabin building, Florida in the winter and North Carolina for a couple of summers. During the winter, there was lots of time to read and think and wonder what I'd done and what I was really going to do from then on. And then one evening, an answer came to me. I remember the moment. I was sitting on the porch of the house where I grew up in Florida. It's on a hill. Yes, it's on a hill in Florida, the Central Ridge. I was watching the sunset there I am again, over Crooked Lake when the insight came. Sitting there, you could be a Unitarian Universalist minister. To which I very quickly responded to myself, but I don't even go to church. Seriously. I did add much just so I could repeat it later on, but it was a radically new idea that had come quite out of the blue. But it spoke to me, called me to ministry, as it were. My excitement and connection grew. It felt like right living to me and for me. Yes, I followed it up with some practical thinking, or many of you would say somewhat practical. I followed through and checked it out and talked to people and visited ministers and then went to see schools and then thought about it more. But this is where it came from, and this is the insight that started and guided the process. That just wasn't how I was used to operating. You don't listen to intuitions. You figure it out. My awareness was definitely taken by surprise. Even as I listened and as the aha pulled things together and made ever more sense and then became direction and action, I continued to wonder how to talk about where this insight or idea or intuition came from. How did it happen? Was it God's voice? My voice? Whose voice? Should I be taking medication? How did I understand this? Just opening to it was a new move for me. So fast forward to Divinity School and Professor Richard R. Niebuhr and also Sharon Parks, who had been a doctoral student of Niebuhr's. Both then introduced me to the thinking of Samuel Taylor Coleridge on reason and the imagination. Niebuhr in the context of theological themes and philosophy. One of the classes was called Kant, Coleridge, and Schleiermacher. It's the best title for a class I've ever heard. Sharon Parks brought it in pastoral counseling as part of understanding how we make meaning and find insights and compose the larger organizing understandings that she calls faith. As in the faith all human beings do, rather than speaking of faith as a particular set of beliefs that organizations have and that build walls in the middle of the road. And at the center of this meaning-making that we are always doing to stay in right orientation with life is our imagination. And it became clear to me that it is important for us, we for whom things fall apart and must put back together again, must be put back together again. It's important for us to have some theory or sense of how this organizing component of mind and being works. I think if we know a little bit about it, we can be in more intentional relationship with it. We can help it and practice it and strengthen it and benefit from it more. We can feel like an active participant rather than just a passive person in waiting. Being in better relationship with our imagination can help us live well and in better relationship with right living. So, yes, the insight that I could be a Unitarian Universalist minister and other similar aha moments are my mind and my experience at work. Yes, they are psychological history and neurological events too. Yes, they involve intuition and are something beyond my conscious efforts. And yes, I can understand them in the language of being a part of the holy or the divine. But I start from and with my understanding of the imagination as the composing and recomposing activity of my consciousness, of pulling the pieces back together again. Imagination is different from fantasy or fanciful. Fanciful, Parks says, in its common usage connotes the unreal. Fantasy takes the images in the mind and rearranges them in unreal ways. Fancy, for example, Parks writes, can associate talking and mice, composing a Mickey Mouse to reign over Fantasyland. By contrast, the task of the imagination, and particularly the religious imagination, is to compose truth. It is to compose the real. Coleridge described imagination as the highest power of reason, which includes all the powers of the mind, sense, perception, understanding, and so on. It's that power within reason that can transcend the contradictions of understanding and shape the pieces into one. Coleridge saw this depth of imagination as the highest power of the knowing mind. Now, he was an 18th century Enlightenment thinker and poet, so I won't keep going with this, but here's where James Loder stands a chance of saving the morning for you. He's a modern educator, clinical psychologist, and theologian. He says that the process of the imagination can be thought of as having five critical elements. We're only going to focus on remembering one, but here are the five. First, there's the conscious conflict when things fall apart. Then there's a pause or interlude for scanning. Out of that comes an image or an insight. That image or insight allows us to repattern our lives and release new energy. And five, then we interpret it or have testimony. We prove it out in community. The one we're going to focus on is the second one, pause. The first movement, conscious conflict, self-explanatory. We all know it. We live it. It's when things fall apart. The old way of day-to-day has changed all of a sudden, and we don't know what to do. We don't know how to feel. We don't know what to think. We are in conflict. We are conflicted within ourselves. How are we trained to handle being in that mess, being in any mess? We're trained to try harder, to work harder, to push at it harder. Or the other thing is to box it up and put it aside. Get over it. Move on from it. Just box it up and push it aside. Does that change anything? Many times we can only do so much. We can only sort out the conflict so far. Then, if we do or invite our imagination to help us become one with our life and ourselves again, to recompose what is going on into meaningful understanding, we must find the space to give ourselves a break. After we've tried our best and worked it over and thought it through, there comes a time to stop and give it a rest. The quietly held rest creates the space for the new insight to find its way through. When someone says, "I'm stuck," they may need some space and time. They may need a break to bring the epiphany out of the unconscious into consciousness. You may have friends who say, "I need to pray about this." What are they saying? I need that pause. I knew a Buddhist monk who said, when you are so busy that you don't have time to sit in meditation, that's when you need to spend twice as much time sitting in meditation. Perhaps you need the time to sit quietly in the morning with a cup of tea or coffee, and that will be enough until you pour the second cup of coffee, and then that will be too much. In my opening story, I was rocking gently on the porch as the sun went down. The pause in which new creation occurs may be small, but it is very hard to speak up for and to honor and to give it space in a busy, do more world that rewards busyness and demands efficiency and says, if you're not busy and efficient, you need to get busier and more efficient to be good. And yet the pause is required for the imagination to take awareness by surprise. It's as if in the quiet of the mind, it sneaks up on the way things are, or the way we see them as having to be, and surprises us into new perception. In that insight, understanding is regained, real understanding, as in foundationally organizing. We say, what? I got my feet under me again. Understanding. With that repatterning comes release and renewal. The energy of being stuck is gone. Trying to figure it out is now behind us. The emotional drama passes. There is freedom that comes from not having to force new life into old forms. Life flows again. The promise is renewed. for another while until things fall apart again, maybe later that morning. Again from Sharon Parks. This repatterning makes possible a freshness of sensation that Coleridge described as a seeing with new eyes as on the morning of the first day of creation. Renewal. New vision combined with the gift of new energy recomposes and exhilarates the soul and effectively grounds a sense of confidence, assurance, and new strength. Above all, there is a sense of having achieved a more adequate orientation to reality. Imagination, she says, therefore, is the power of realization, the power to make real. It's been a few years since I brought out this cup, and it was given to me by a fellow student back in a seminar where we were writing our senior papers, and he was United Church of Christ. So his theology was, he was a theist, to say the least. And he gave me this cup. I was struggling in getting my paper written. Surprise, surprise. Things were falling apart. And it's a Hallmark cup, smiley face mug on the bottom here. And it says, I do my best and leave the rest to God. It's also got fall colors on the trees. But I think about this. It says, I do my best. Just put the theology aside if you're struggling with that, because that's what I had to do. But I'm good with it. I do my best. What does it say? It doesn't say, I do the best. It says, I do my best. And my best, believe it or not, is situational. I have to come back and remind myself of that all the time. I do my best. And then it says, and leave the rest to God. Leave the rest to God, to the undercurrents of the soul, to the imagination. What else? How do you understand it? That depth of something more that speaks to you if you give it a chance. Leave the rest. We think of rest as the undone, right? Leave what's undone. But as I was reading this, awareness taken by surprise. I've never seen in the years I've had this mug another meaning for the word rest. I leave the pause. I leave the repose. I leave the moment of stillness. I give it over to the imagination to do its work and to take my awareness by surprise. May your awareness be taken by surprise, and may you be renewed.